Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
We're back. It's a distraction. I'm through. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. Let's get Justin Halpert in. He's the guest.
What?
Abbott Elementary, Harley Quinn, blah blah blah.
Oh, the TV guy.
Yeah, the TV guy. So hi, Justin. So just I have to tell a story, and I was going to tell it to you, Roth, but it's really specifically for Justin because.
Oh,
it,
wow.
All right, I'll leave for a little bit. Just text me when I can come back on the pod.
No. This is quick. So I had my best friend and his wife. They came down for a weekend, like just have dinner, blah 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 blah. And we're sitting at the table and we're talking about my work. And I did not steer the conversation to my work. It just happened that way. And Howard asks my wife, he's like, so do you listen to Drew's podcast? And my wife looks at him and she's like, Howard, I hear him all day. and that was all she needed to say. I was like, okay, all right, yeah, I get it. Like, she doesn't even like she's in the other room right now, and just hearing me through the walls of my office doing the podcast is too much for her. So she did.
Yeah, I get it. I feel like if she it's like somebody's been in war and they've heard the screams of death and they close their eyes 30 years later, that's your wife. I feel like she could close her eyes and at any moment just hear that like booming, loud, just northeastern voice.
Yep. Hey! Yeah. All day long with that shit.
She's always telling me to quiet down. I'm like, we've been married 21 years. You should be fucking used to this by now. But that's
you know what your voice is? I figured out your voice. Your voice is like when you bring in, sometimes when you bring in, we do an animated show, we bring in voice actors and we'll ask them like, all right, it's this type of character. And then they'll give a first effort. Your voice is like, somebody's like, it's a new Muppet. And they're like, just here's my first thought. And they do it. And you're like, that's not quite it, but I like that direction. That's your voice. It's that first
effort. I'm a failed Muppet. I
also like the idea of a new Muppet there, too, that like at whatever, like Jim Henson Laboratories deep below the surface of the earth, there are Muppets being hatched or I don't know what, or extruded. Yeah. I don't know where you get them. But
they
just some
for them.
Hideous, misshapen thing squawking about how it's back. And they're like, yes, this one will do well.
Meeting podcast. Good. Justin, you wanted to come on because you wanted to complain about gambling taking over sports broadcasting. So let's do that right now. Justin, do you want to start with your beef or do you want me to set the table a little bit more than that?
I mean, whatever you'd like. I'm ready to start. I'm ready to come in and close. I could do anything in this lineup.
Yeah, look. I don't think we know that our listeners presumably watch some sports on television or read about it online or engage with it anywhere that people engage with it. You've definitely noticed that it sucks and everything is crowded with gambling information, right? Like, I'm assuming there's no way that anybody could have this sneaking up on them at this moment.
Well, right. And I mean, look, it might be your opinion that it sucks, but perhaps, for those of us who win big money at the table, you know, and those of us who know when Vegas doesn't know what to do with a game, we might feel a bit more amenable.
Yeah, we should exclude Bareback Sportsbook, our longtime sponsor.
That's right.
Partner from this.
Anyway, Roth, we touched on Shohei Ohtani's interpreter getting pinched, and that story kind of fizzled out the way we kind of thought it would. But since we talked about that, Raptor scrub Jonte Porter, he got shelved for potentially manipulating prop bets on him by taking himself out of two games with suspicious injuries. So, first of all, gentlemen, is Jonte Porter guilty, Justin Halpert?
Having not knowing the details of it, I feel qualified to say yes.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Smart. Good. Yeah. Good qualifier, yeah. Good take.
Yeah.
He's suspicious just because the Porter family of basketballers is like one of the weirdest collections of public Americans that we've got.
Is he related to Otto vibes. Porter?
He is related to Michael Porter Jr. It's his brother.
Oh,
he is? That's his brother. I did not realize that.
Yeah, wow. And Michael Porter Jr.'s got kind of strange vibes. Like, he's got the long-standing basketball prodigy thing where it really does seem like he kind of like hatched out of an egg at the age of 18 and like was able to play basketball, but is not a finished guy. There's always been rumors about him having like extremely bad conservative politics. Jonte Porter.
That's not rumors. That's established.
Yeah, I think that's established.
He's had weird tweets and shit. He's a dipshit.
But it's not like he's not, this is going to alienate everybody who doesn't remember who Spencer Hawes is. He's not like Spencer Hawes or Andrew Bogut, where he's actively doing the like online provocateur thing. Like, he's just a shithead. Whereas Drew loves a well-pronounced French word.
I do.
But Jonte Porter is suspicious because he's beyond being like kind of a marginal guy who could manipulate a prop bet on himself just by taking himself out of the garbage time minutes he has. He's also like a crypto NFT like grind set guy. And as far as I'm like that, we're going to get into the other aspects of gambling culture that suck. But mainstreaming that kind of sociopathy is one of my least favorite things that the new availability of these speculative tools has done. And so, like, once you've got like a bored ape, I basically consider you possible that you could commit any crime.
Yeah.
Like, if you've made that initial decision, then the rest of it is just all open range. No
but offenses. only boring crimes. Like, I'm not you're not going to execute a cool bank heist or anything like that. You're a dipshit.
You're going to win $10,000 by intentionally missing a layup.
Although, listen, I think, Justin, I think your beef is less with these apps and these companies threatening the integrity of the games. Then you just are sick of hearing about their bullshit on every single telecast. Would that be accurate to say?
That's accurate. That my beef is that now everything is through the lens. I'm now offered two types of sports podcasts. It's either every single thing through the lens of sports betting, which is the single. You remember after Rounders came out, that like period of time where every fucking dipshit would talk about their bad beat And nothing is more boring than hearing some idiot talk about poker. It's like the most boring thing in the world.
Yeah.
You remember? It was just
you
all
had pocket
that.
Fives? Go on. Don't tell this story too fast. I want to savor it.
Hold on. Set the scene. Those two cards? I've never even heard of those two cards.
Wow.
Keep going.
All right. And you're at a table with a bunch of assholes, right? Okay. Yes. That's interesting. Terrific.
No, there was that brief stretch where televised poker was like going to be the next big thing. It was kind of like the 95 swing music revival. Like, it lasted a month.
It was Zoot Suit Riot of chaos.
Yeah. Because it was like, why? Like, oh man, this is a big deal. People are talking about this. I better check out what Phil Hellmuth's doing at the table. And then you turn on the TV and it's five dipshits in sunglasses just sitting there with like little hole card graphics.
Guys that you would instinctively not make eye contact with in any social situation, but then you're just watching them play cards on TV.
Yeah, and I was like, hey, they're wearing sunglasses. They shouldn't be able to do that.
Inside? And
it sucked. And I think the thing about it was that it had started to kind of like bleed into like, this is what it means to be a man and have male friends as you play poker with them. And it was like infusing into like male friendships and stuff, right? And then it went away because it's literally the most boring thing in the entire world. And so people were just like, only the like degenerates went back to it.
Right.
But what's happening in sports betting is that it's so clear that all these fucking sites that DraftKings, FanDuel, FanFuel, whatever the fuck, they all...
Not Bareback.
That's an excellent company.
It's got integrity.
Yeah. They're all sort of finding these podcasts that speak to like young and middle-aged men and trying to associate like being a dude and sports betting. They're one and the same.
Yep.
And because of that, every single asshole who has a fucking sports podcast is either doing that. Everything's through the line of like, oh, well, you know what I love is I love the Wizards minus 14 tonight. And then I have to hear somebody talk about why Jordan Poole in the fourth quarter of a game is shooting less than 25% when the rest of the game is shooting 31%. And that's the market inefficiency. And it's so fucking boring. And then the only other option I'm offered is like the Nate Duncans of the world, who are equally as boring, but they're into like dry analytics, like accessing why a dribble handoff from one wing is more effective than one than the other wing. And I'm like, what happened to just like hearing people talk about sports as entertainment? It's like, it's gone.
Yeah.
And it's gone because of these fucking sports betting sites. Every single thing is through the prism of, ew, could I make it? Oh man, I laid 100 on that. And oh, I didn't even want to tell you what I bet. It's like, I don't fucking care. It's so fucking boring.
Yep.
We have Steph Curry. We have Anthony Edwards. We have the most amazing athletes in the world playing sports. And no one even gives a shit about discussing that because that's not entertaining enough. It's more entertaining to think about if I could make $37 on a 2-to-1 parlay.
I agree with this, but I want to add one extra bit to it because I think that broadly speaking, Justin is right on there for me. Like the bit of it that I want to get into later, we don't need to do it now, is how shitty the vibe is of the gambling chat in general, that it's not just the sort of thing where it's boring to hear someone be like, ah, oh, you know, I had like three legs of my four leg parlay, but like it didn't hit on the last one. Like that's just basically you telling me about a bowel movement. I'm just like, super good work. Like, I'm glad it came out of your
that's
butt,
actually,
I guess.
I write about bowel movements every week.
I know, but you bring some adjectives to bear on the situation.
That's right. I'm special.
You add a little bit of pizzazz.
That's right.
But the idea of, beyond like the sort of like civilian level gambling conversation sucks, it's boring, but the level of it that it has like some editorial thing, like basically what Justin is talking about, not just like podcasts, but seeing people like before the like, was it the men's basketball final? I think that broadcasters were going around talking about like, what's an over under bet you like on this? Or what's like a prop bet you like on this? That sucks. Not only does it add no value, I think it cheapens things in the way that it makes everything more like business, which sucks. Also, and this is something that I can't exactly justify, but I will say that it's true. When Al Michaels would make like a cheeky reference to the spread back in the day, which he would do all the time, there was a part of me that was like, oh, Al, you're so naughty. Like, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, but that had like a little bit of fun to it. Now, I feel like as it's like entered the actual main conversation about this stuff, there's a part of me that's like, shut up. Describe the sports to me. Like, never acknowledge that shit exists.
There's a couple things here. One is, I don't feel as if this is terribly new because of the fantasy sports boom. Like, I mean, how many times did you see during a pregame show, given if you watch pregame shows, I never watch a fucking pregame show or a postgame show anymore, but like they would talk about, you know, start and sit fantasy and, you know, all the standard fantasy football shit. And that's gambling too, right? And
well, I would say that like when you play fantasy sports, you're largely playing against your friends, right? And it's completely tied to how well that player did, right? There's not like this like minutia of, you know, if we can crunch this number in the fourth quarter, the over under in the second half, it's like, it's largely the game you're watching, right? It's like Justin Jefferson has 7 catches for 122 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's exciting and fun to watch.
Yep.
And also your fantasy player does well. And when it does well, you get to talk shit to your brother-in-law and whoever's in your fantasy league together, right? It's like generally, I would say the difference is it is like, it's like a spice put on top of sports, right? It's just it's just something that like makes sports a little bit more delicious, but it doesn't make it any more boring, right? Because it's just like you can talk about sports, and it also applies to fantasy. If some idiot on ESPN is telling me, you know, who he thinks is going to have a breakout game, that also applies to my fantasy team, right? It's one and the same.
The difference of sports. Okay.
Yes. The difference is the Zatar, the tagine of sports.
Mm.
The difference
like, tagine is a dish and not a spice. I just want that noted.
No, there's a T-A-I-J-I-N.
Yeah.
My son puts that on everything. Like I'll make like pot roast and he'll put it on there and I'll be like, what the fuck?
I've seen it generally put on like mangoes.
Insulting.
It's like, you go to Tijuana, you can get like, you know.
I like that shit. I know what you're talking about.
All right. But the difference is, I think, for sports betting is it's taken it though the discussions had about it have really nothing to do most of the time with enjoying the game. And instead of it being a spice that is put on top of the game, like whereas if it's just like, I got $100 on somebody so and so to win, here's why I think they're gonna win. Okay, fine. That's a spice on top of the game. But it's these like granular, like in the weeds. Shit, it's like imagine those conversations about analytics that are so boring but actually kind of affect the game, and then take out the part where they affect the game at all.
Yep, that's what I was gonna say. That this is the food metaphor that I would come up with for this, not entirely correct, but it popped into my head. If the other thing is seasoning over the top, this is like stuffed crust pizza. Like it's just adding some like weird gnarly fat in a place where you don't necessarily want it. You know, and there's, I don't know, we had a lot of extra cheese, so we just kind of piped it in there, and now your pizza is 3 times as unhealthy as it was before.
I completely agree.
Let me ask you, both of you, and I'll start with you, Justin. What's the solution then? Is it going back to prohibition? And I know how unrealistic that is because the cat's out of the bag, Sarah. But if you were a fairy godmother and you had a magic wand and you could make it any way you wanted, what would be the best thing to make this better?
This is what I'm going to suggest. We all, and it takes all of us working together. Okay.
Ooh, it's on
every
us.
Every single time any person talks to you about your bet, you respond with, that's the fucking lamest shit I've ever heard. Stop talking to me about that. That's it. If we all do this, every single one of us individually, it will then cease to be a cool thing that cool dudes do. And it'll be like talking about how you can't get a boner. Like nobody talks about that because it's not really like a fun thing to talk about and it's not exciting and it makes you look bad, right? You're like, oh man, I just can't get a hard dick. I can't get one. No one's saying that, right? That's what we need to turn gambling into. Like
as someone who suffers from ED, I take a little bit of offense to
but
that.
The idea of like watching a Chargers game and being like, this reminds me of my sexual failures. Like, yes, if you can code it that way, then like obviously that's the thing to do. I do like the idea of harnessing the power of positive social pressure to be like, no, you have to put that away. I don't want to hear about that.
Yes.
But it can go the wrong way. It can go into sort of school marm territory. Because like, listen, I'll say it now. We, and Barry knows this, every season before the NFL season, Barry does a post called "Please tell us about your fantasy team. We want to hear all about it." And then he turns the comments off on that post, and that's the joke, right? And I fucking hate it because it's like I like fantasy football, and if you all talk about fantasy football, go nuts, it's fun. And like you're not a, I don't like the idea of positing myself above that kind of shit.
No, but this is what will happen. And if to go back to my erectile dysfunction analogy, the people who have ED, they'll find the other people who have it. And then they can have that conversation together and feel like they have someone who understands them.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I just don't want to have that conversation. I don't want to normalize that conversation. I just want you who have that issue, go talk. Drew, you have it? Go talk to another guy who has it. That's
great. Are you cock shaming me? You are. Yeah. You're shaming my cock. And I find that strangely racist.
This is where I should be supporting Drew and his penis, but I feel like I want to get to the other point.
Speak up for my dick already.
Yeah, look, it's terrific.
Thank you.
I don't know. But the thing that I will get to about this, I think this is the real middle ground, because prohibition, I've been kind of fascinated by the Supreme Court ruling that, like, just basically in the same way that they got rid of the Voting Rights Act, they were like, no, you don't need to do that anymore. Like, and so it was recent, it was like 2016 or something like that.
Yeah.
That this law, which had stood for many, many years for good reason, just fell by the wayside. And, you know, obviously we all know what's happened since. It's hard to get, especially sports leagues, but I think just anything in the culture, once there is this much money in it, even if that money is used to like beggar normal people, like if it's just like people losing $120 every Sunday as a matter of course because they think it's fun, that sucks. But it's hard to get it all the way out. It's just not a very high functioning political system we've got. But shrinking it to the point where it's like, as Justin said, like it's just something that people talk about on Reddit, then like that I could deal with, you know, in the same way that I feel like there's a lot of stock market related discourse or any of those sorts of like shitty new versions of financial arbitrage. I know people are talking about that all the time, and I know people are losing money on it, and some of them are maybe even making money on it, but it doesn't register. I don't see that in the monitors one way or the other, you know, because I'm paying attention to other shit. It's for sure happening, but it's in a subreddit that I would not visit unless like someone had kidnapped a member of my family and said that I would have to do it in order to get them back.
Couldn't you just regulate it like cigarettes? Like, you know how cigarettes, they can't advertise anymore. They can't do any TV advertising. What if you banned sportsbook betting on television and signage at games? Would that be okay?
Sure.
It would help.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it would help. I mean, I think that that's part of the...
I thought you were going to call me a moderate Democrat when I said that.
No, that's like as far as these, as like compromise things go, like everything that you could come up with is less than what we have now. And that's the goal for me.
Like, I think the way that happens then is something outrageous has to happen, like an outrageous scandal. So like it would have to be
Ohtani betting on baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be like Ohtani betting on himself or betting against the Angels. And that's
it has to be Ohtani saying, I got addicted to gambling by listening to Barstool Sports podcast.
That's the idea.
And if he says that, if he says those words, he's like, I hate gambling. I'm so mad I'm addicted. But I listened to like Duke and the blah, blah, blah on Barstool. Then we'll see some regulation.
Okay. Imagine just saying that through an interpreter, being like, someone named Squincher. He says his name is Squincher. He gets all his advice from Squincher, and it's bad advice. He lost a lot of money.
The one thing that turns me off is like there are ads for FanDuel, because there's a million ads for FanDuel every fucking game or whatever. And they always have like sample trash talk texts from people on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, text balls. So it's like, this is going to be lit. And then like fire emojis. And it's like, I got big money on this one. And
texting
like,
with the homies. Like I got Mike Williams plus 5.5 receptions today.
Yeah. It's like a super like communal thing. Like they're trying. And it's like the saddest shit. Like
imagine
if I texted you, like I text
from your
friend. I pop a gummy and text people just awful shit, but like not that lame.
Yep.
Like I'm still texting about like basic sports. I'm not going to be like, well, guess who's got the over on the fourth quarter of this UFL game, baby.
If Woo-hoo! Greg Joseph misses a field goal, daddy's going to get a new whatever he wants. Well, yeah, fuck that. Stupid. Don't tell me that. If you're doing it, that's fine. But I don't want to know.
That's the thing. There's nothing wrong with erectile dysfunction. I just don't want to have that conversation.
I'm so refreshed that there's another person on here that's bringing the conversation back to dicks instead of me.
Yeah. I've really been falling down on the job there. I'm constantly steering it back towards the Mets.
Just a good, long, hard conversation.
All right. That's enough.
It's time for- you know, I talk about more stuff with Justin when we get back. But before we get to break, this show is sponsored by Fanatics Hard Seltzer. Drink up to your favorite teams with officially licensed flavors like Eagle's Eyed Cherry, Crimson Tide Punch, and Chicago Berries. Warning, may contain strychnine. We'll be right back with Justin Halpern.
Hey, it's Dave. I, as you know, live an active lifestyle. I'm always out moving through the city in which I live, riding trains, walking down sidewalks, places where things are noisy. And sometimes it's nice to hear music instead of other people talking or honking or screaming at each other. For that reason, I found it helpful to bring along Raycon Everyday Earbuds. Raycons offer amazing quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. The optimized gel tips on these earbuds are designed to fit comfortably in your ears and actually stay there, whether you are running to catch a subway or bus, as maybe I have sometimes had to do, or shooting around basketball-wise, as I have also been known to do. I tend to use them out in the city doing my everyday life thing, and they manage to both deliver a high quality, clear sound of whatever it is that I'm listening to without completely blocking out the world around me. It's the best of both worlds, and they're comfortable to wear. I can listen to them at any time, which is nice. With 8 hours of playtime and 32 hours of battery life, I don't have to worry about whether they're up for the task. So go to buyraycon.com/distraction today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/distraction. That's buyraycon.com/distraction.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
And we're back with Justin Halpern talking about gambling. And before we move on to something else, I did want to mention that, like, I remember the gambling content I liked the least was, like, back when I listened to sports talk radio, like, there'd always be, like, a dead hour, like, on, like, early Saturday or Sunday morning. And instead of having an actual show, they'd fill it with, like, an infomercial, like, an hour-long infomercial from, like, not Jimmy the Greek, but like Dave the Albanian,
yeah, I was gonna
like
say.
Touting his pick. So he'd be like, I'm giving you today's lock for free. But then you call my 900 line and you get 5 free locks for $199 a minute and $399 each additional minute. And those guys were always, you know, they might have been a bit suspect, Justin, but at least they were, upfront about what they were doing.
Yeah. No, I think that's what it needs to go back. Because when you watch those guys, even as a kid, when I watch them, I'm like, oh, this, I don't fully understand what's happening here, but I know this man lives a sad life.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that. And, like, I think that's what we're missing is, like, I want gambling to be like synonymous with divorced dads, right? It's like you hear somebody talking about it and you're like, oh, that guy's going through a hard time in his family life. Like,
not like a fun thing you do, which is clearly what I think Drew is right with those texts. Like, that's clearly what FanDuel is going for, is like, this is a thing you do with your friends. Like, you get together and you give us $150 every week. And that is like,
it's a communal experience with you and your friend Houso and Blue Boy. And
whereas, like, really, the idea of it being getting on the phone with a man who just like eats a pack of cigarettes every day. You know, like, that's what we should be trying to amp up, because that is always the feeling that I had from it too, was like, as a kid, it was like scary to me, like these were like ogres. But I remember them in like the tri-state area too. You'd see them, I mean, in real life sometimes. I remember like bars scaring me as a kid. You just look in there and it's 100% men and cigarette smoke, and I was like, that's not right. But the same vibe that you'd get from like what Drew is talking about, just these like raspy, shitty guys lying to you about the Jets. Like, you should be able to pick up on that vibe instantly and go the other way.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. The more like we can to like, I remember when I was really, I was like 8 or 9, my dad took me to an off-track betting site. One time. And I went in there and I was like, it was like in San Diego, this like in this weird place. And I walked in and I remember just being like, the overwhelming like odor of loser was so strong. And like, I didn't even know it at the time. It was like a thick fog in the room that I couldn't see my hand in front of my face because there was too much loser everywhere. And I just remember feeling like, oh, wow. This, I never want to be like any of these people. Yep. This is the saddest, grossest place there is.
Maybe that's another treatment for it, is like the way that, you know, sort of the old timey parenting thing of being like, well, why don't you smoke the whole pack if you like smoking cigarettes so much? Like, you have to go to an OTB, or you go, for me, like my early gambling exposure was going to see harness racing at the Big M, the racetrack in the Meadowlands. And it was... not great. Like, it was cool in the sense you could get in for free and just like hang out outside with your friends and like maybe place a $5 bet, because I was in high school, I didn't have money.
Was Mike Francesa there?
I mean, Mike Francesa was there in like hundreds of different guises. Like, there were
they were all Mike Francesa.
just a wall of Francesers.
I remember, everybody's just being like, wait a second, like just over and over. It was
wrong horse.
I remember seeing just unaccompanied children there and being like, this is the worst place that you could possibly be. Just like a young child at a table with a racing form in front of it, and there's no adult there. And I know an adult brought
them there. Were they collateral?
No, I see, this is the thing. I don't know. Like, where's the grown-up who's supposed to be taking care of this kid? What are you doing instead?
Might be better without the parent in that instance.
Yeah.
Like, you just might just be better off on your own than having that particular parent. Justin, you also wanted to talk about the incredible rash of pitching injuries that have hit Major League Baseball right now. Everyone's elbow is exploding, and these are like important pitchers that it's happening to. You were a college pitcher yourself. You pitched at San Diego State. What gives here? Why are all the pitchers dying?
All right, so a couple things, because I also have kids now who are playing Little League Baseball. First off,
are you a Little League dad? Do you scream? Are you like,
No, I don't scream.
Are you like, focus?
No, occasionally you do run into a Little League dad and you're like, oof.
Fuck yeah, you do.
But I think that Little League dad definitely does FanDuel.
He's got action on the game.
Yeah.
He's like really mad at his kids are letting him down.
Yes. So when I played in college, my years were 99 to 2002. Everyone, almost everyone was doing steroids, like on my team and other teams. It was like it was just the thing. Like, everybody was doing it. I didn't do it because it took a lot of work, and I just frankly didn't want to put in that kind of time.
wait, what was the work? Like, just the buying it?
You had to go to Mexico and buy it, because in San Diego, we would just go to Mexico. You have to go to Mexico and buy it. You have to do the cycles. You have to do the whole thing. It was just a whole thing. But it was all like different kinds of stuff, right? It was like, as we all realized, the cream and the clear and all this kind of shit.
But also, that was happening in the majors at the same time, too.
Right,
this
exactly.
was like just one uniform sheet of steroid usage across the sport.
Right. It started in the majors, right? Yeah. And then it sort of trickled down to everybody here. And the reason everybody was doing it was because if you didn't do it, it had reached that tipping point. Somewhere it reached that tipping point where enough guys were doing it that if you didn't do it, then you weren't going to be able to compete on the same level as those guys, right? And so then it became an epidemic, and then we all know what happened. Okay, so that is what's happening now. Not steroids, though. It is, if you go on your like Instagram or whatever, and you follow any kind of sports, at some point, you will see some kind of like Instagram ad where it's like, at Driveline Baseball, what we do is we take guys throwing 84 and in 2 months they're throwing 97. And it's like these intense, everything is like velocity oriented, right? Because when I was a senior in high school, if you threw like 86, 87 in high school, there was a good chance you were going to be like drafted in the later rounds of the MLB draft, right? Now, my friend has a kid playing. They faced some pitcher the other day who was throwing like 92, 93. And I was like, oh, is he going to get drafted in high school? Yeah, is he going to get drafted? He's like, no, he won't. There's no chance he'll get drafted. It's not going to happen. Like, you have to be a guy throwing like 98, 99 to get drafted. Like 97, 98, 99 to get drafted. So what's happened is velocity has like been put at this like premium. There are no like Greg Maddoxes being drafted. There are only, you know, Joel Zumaias being drafted. That one's for you, Rob.
I appreciate that a lot.
So what's happening is we are all putting this like insane, they are maximizing every single little shred of force possible in their body to get that baseball to spin more, to be thrown faster, because you're not going to make the major leagues if you don't, right? And that's like the ultimate goal of every one of these little league dads, is to get their kid into the major leagues. They all think it's crazy. There's a kid who was playing. He was really good player. His dad's 5'6", his mom's 5'3". And his dad is talking about his son playing Major League Baseball. And I'm like, unfortunately, genetics is telling me this will never happen for you and your son. I mean, it's just not going
to
happen.
Are you going to send him back in time to the 1930s when there was like more people roughly that size playing professional sports?
Right. Which even then had nicknames like Little Thomas.
Yeah, you know, right. I was going to say.
So
the
I think
miniature Polak. You can't say stuff like that anymore. It's considered very rude.
So I think what's happening is now we're in this cycle where you can't make the major leagues unless you're throwing fucking gas. But you can't. Most human bodies, like, there's a reason why Nolan Ryan was this like freak of nature, is because he was the only one who could do it and stay healthy. Right.
Yep. Right.
Nobody else was throwing that hard back then. And so the game is actually worse for it, because now it's all strikeouts, because it's all guys coming in who have like 22 inches, you know, of break on their slider, and then a sinking fastball that goes 18 inches the other way. And the hitter is faced with like a matrix where they have 0.04 seconds to decide whether this ball is going to go left or right. Yeah. Right. And so it's just guessing. And what's happened is all these pitchers are all geeked up to have to throw this hard. And the human body cannot, it's telling us over and over and over again, it cannot do this. You cannot just throw this hard. Everybody cannot do it. And yet everybody is doing it. And then thus we're seeing this huge rash of injuries. And it's actually making the game worse, even aside from the injuries. So my feeling here is like, there has to be something done by Major League Baseball that I think would benefit the game, make it more watchable, because people would pitch to contact because they'd have to, right? And B, stop this like giant rash of injuries where every single guy who throws 99 or 100 miles an hour, you know, is going to get at least one Tommy John surgery, and is probably going to get two.
Yeah, there's a guy on the Reds that I saw. I actually missed the one pitch he threw. He got hurt, threw one pitch against the Mets, left the game. He's going to get his third Tommy John surgery on Friday.
Oh, that's good luck.
Terrible, you know, and that, I agree with the general, like said, I don't know what you would do to manage this, but the idea that pitching has always been done at the like sort of upper boundary of what, it's not a thing that you should be doing with your arm, shoulder, back, whatever. Like, it's just a very violent motion done repeatedly with maximum force. Like, bodies aren't designed to hold up to that, and they don't. The thing that's been weird to me, and I'm curious about this because Justin is, I know, is also like a pitching weenie. Like, we talked about Jacob deGrom for a post that I never wound up actually writing about how he kept tweaking and finding, you know, an extra mile per hour every offseason. And it was all technical stuff, that it would be like noticing some bit of pronation or some, you know, angle of where you're throwing the ball at that is just like microscopic. You would only get it from breaking down tape at that level. And then he would do it and then it would work until it didn't work, until your body breaks. Like, how do you get... Jacob deGrom is a weird example because he is a true blue maniac, even by the standards of Major League Baseball pitchers who are like into refining their stuff, hyper-competitive, generally, you know, on the can't-tell-me-shit spectrum, scoring extremely high, worryingly, sometimes self-defeatingly so. How do you get a pitcher to adhere to a set of best practices, if such a thing could be made to exist, that was like, you're going to throw 95, but you're going to be able to throw it in the sixth and seventh inning, and you're not going to get hurt as much?
Roids.
Is that the sort of thing that would appeal to them? Like, is that, like, how do you make that sale, I guess?
So I think, unfortunately, I actually heard Justin Verlander talking about this, and I think he was dead on. It's hard to take him seriously after seeing the leaked naked pictures of him, but
yeah,
he had a cute butt.
Some of the least sexy naked pictures ever. They look like pictures taken at a wedding. Like, they were just both
yeah,
nude.
Like, if you just remove the clothing, they're just yep. at a wedding. It really was upsetting. But he pitched an idea that I think actually makes sense, because as a pitcher, like, okay, if I know I'm coming in, if I only have to get through five innings, like, if I know there's no world where I'm ever going to have to face the lineup a third time over, then the way that I approach it as a starting pitcher is I just go all out for as many innings as I can. And I'm throwing max velocity. And I know that all I have to do is get to even four innings will be considered at some points a quality start, four or five innings, right? So what Verlander was pitching was that that they put something in where a starter is incentivized to throw to the seventh inning, right? Like, something about like tying the pitcher to the DH. If you pull the pitcher before you pull the pitcher like in the fourth inning, then you also lose your DH, and the pitcher coming in will now have to. So then we make it analytically a problem to pull your pitchers early. And I think ultimately, here's what will happen if we do something like that. Pitchers will still max out and try to max out, and then we will break them. And we will break enough of them. Unfortunately, this is how it'll have to happen. We'll break enough of them that we'll have to completely reconsider the way that we talk about building an arm and pitching from even the youth age. Because that's the other part of it that I wanted to talk about, which is that I have friends who have like really talented kids in terms of baseball. And they're playing in travel ball. They're playing 50 to 70 games a year.
Yeah.
A year.
Hearing stories about Bryce Harper doing that when he was in high school. And it was like, it was because he was a freak, but he also wasn't pitching. Like, his parents
still
hurt
his arm, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. But this is the idea of like having a teenage child throw the equivalent of like 150 innings in a year is like, absolutely not, dude. Like, that is very risky.
You said,
Justin, that there had to be like sort of a breaking point, no pun intended, but that's already happening, isn't it? And it doesn't look like MLB's inclined to do shit about it.
Well, here is the breaking point, and this is where I think, unfortunately, I hate to ever give the free market any sort of credit, but I think what's going to happen is not these big league clubs are going to stop offering these Yamamoto-sized contracts to... You saw what happened to Blake Snell.
Yeah, and Jordan Montgomery. There's like, teams are clearly arbitraging this idea of like, well, he's 32, so like, why would you give him a 4-year contract? He's not going to be effective for even half of that.
It's what happened to running backs in the NFL. Is like, they no longer are offering big contracts. And so what'll happen is, if you're one of these guys who throws 99 or 100, you're not going to get a 10-year contract. It's not going to happen for you because they can't spend their money that way, right? And so what is going to happen is the Joe Musgroves of the world, who throw 92, 93, have a pretty connected delivery, like are staying fairly, you know, reliable and healthy, and they're going to give you 180 to 200 innings a year. those guys are going to get the contracts that are a little longer. And in the long run, that's what's going to happen. It's because I just think people are going to stop off. Owners are always looking for a way to fuck players and spend less money. And this is going to be a part of that. You're already starting to see it. That Dodgers contract happened because the Dodgers literally have an unlimited amount of money. And it doesn't matter because they know their TV deal and everything is going to be there for 10 years. But take out the Dodgers and the Yankees, right? And the Red Sox don't spend money anymore. Right. After those two teams, no one else is going to be able to make those sorts of risky bets.
Or if you see a long-term deal for a pitcher, it's going to be the Braves type of deal where you are buying out a guy's arb years. So you're getting the first part of their career, and maybe you're paying something of a premium over what you'd be paying if you didn't extend them like that. But you're getting the period of time before they really start to deteriorate and like become more and more of an injury risk.
The NFL rookie deal.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting, one thing, so I want to go back to Joel Zumaia. I don't know if anybody could have predicted that I was going to want to do that, but is that a name that you remember at all, Drew? Do you like have any recollection of this guy?
Yeah, he played for Cleveland, didn't he?
Detroit. But he was
Cleveland, Detroit, come see, come so.
Right division, played against the Twins. You were probably like, who the fuck is this guy? Why does he have a goatee like that? All reasonable questions. Zumaia was the first guy that I remember watching where I was like, it's irresponsible for him to be throwing as hard as he is. Like, not just that it was cool. I mean, he would like sit 100, like I think has maybe, I guess, Aroldis Chapman is like technically the hardest recorded fastball. But like Zumaia was throwing 101 miles an hour before that was normal. He literally, his forearm broke on his last big league pitch. Like the torque,
like Tom
of it,
Browning style?
Like or like not like Dravecki thing where it was like the bone was depleted. It was basically like he threw too hard. Like his body was just like just cried uncle, and that was it. And he never really did make it back. His career was over when he was still in his 20s. There's something about like having, it wasn't that it was bad that the Tigers had him. He was very good and very useful for them on some teams. But I feel like the idea of a guy like that, and there were, you know, other pitchers that sort of threw hard, sometimes knew where it was going, sometimes didn't, that was not considered like a down market thing to have on your roster, but it was understood as a higher risk investment than the other stuff. And I feel like that's the bit where, so I think Justin's point is correct about the market sort of like correcting for this in a gross way, because it's baseball. That's how the baseball market works. What's weird about it, though, is that I feel like the reason the teams didn't have as many guys like Zumaia, beyond the fact that the good Lord doesn't make that many people that can throw 101 miles an hour all the time, is that I think they were understood as a risk. If you had a guy like that, you were only going to have him for so long. You didn't know when his body was going to literally just kerplode on the mound and become unusable for you. I think the way that teams have sort of corrected for that is by viewing players more fungibly, that yes, they're just basically like, so every team is going to have two guys that throw 100 like that, but you just throw them in the garbage when you're done. They're like single use plastics. And I don't know, like that's the limit of where the market sort of corrects for this, because there's always, especially as you said, like if Driveline is kind of stamping these guys out, or if there is this way of optimizing for velocity, especially, like, you know what it does, and teams are just going to be like, all right, well, those guys, like, they burn out, you know, you never have to pay them because they're done by the time they're 26 or 27. And like, I don't know how you work around that either. Like, it would, especially because, like, if you're on the labor side of that equation, you want to pitch in the fucking majors. Like, you're willing to give up whatever, you know, you don't need to throw a baseball in your 40s. It's not like football, you know?
And you think it's not going to happen to me. You're like, it's not going to happen to me.
Yep. That's the part I was trying to get to with the DeGrom question, is that like the mindset of it, in order to do that job well, like you have to be a fucking maniac. Like you really have to believe that, because otherwise you're just standing in the middle of a stadium with everybody looking at you and somebody's got a bat and they're waiting to hit the pitch you're throwing. Like that's scary if you let it scare you. You just kind of can't, right?
Can I go back for a moment? I made a joke about it, but I do want, because Justin, you started off this conversation talking about how you played college ball back in the time when everyone was on roids, right? And I thought where you were headed with it was, they got rid of roids, but then they amped up the pressure on pitchers to always be throwing 100 miles an hour, right? And they can't do that without roids. So it's like, is there, and I'm dead serious, is there now a detrimental after effect to banning steroids in baseball that has led to this?
Well, certainly I think you're going to have less arm injuries if everyone is able to take steroids. Sure. I mean, I guess. As someone who fully, I don't know how you feel, Roth, but I fully enjoyed the steroid era.
Yeah,
I mean, it was.
Also, you know, it wasn't my back knee. Like, if baseball's always like a TV show to me, I was like, those were some really good seasons of the TV show that I liked.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, seeing it on the player side, it is a very tough thing on a body. And it also fucks you up mentally. Like, I saw several players on my college team just become basically different people when they're on steroids. Like, it really is like that roid rage, like just to Latimer from the program. kind of. That's one's for you too, Roth.
Really.
Hey, I saw that movie too. I'm the football. Violent? Do they become violent too?
Yeah, I think it's just this. Everything is amped up, right? And it's also just not how they look less healthy. You know, it looks like you see those like on Reddit, there'll be a picture of like this crazy buff dog. It's like, it looks like its skin is stretched over its body. You're like, who got this dog so buff? That's what these guys look like. It's not
showing
healthy.
Up at camp looking like Liver King. You're not in the best shape of your life. If you're like a backup catcher with like just visible veins all over your body, like you've made a bad decision.
Yeah.
That's not good for you.
Yeah. And I really think, I mean, I think, you know, ultimately, this is what I think you'll see is I think you'll see a lot more guys try and focus on not pitching, but other positions. Like if you're a star running back in high school, like, do you try to play a different position if your body type will even close to allow it? Because you know, you're not going to get paid as a running back, but you might get paid a lot as a wide receiver, you know? So I do think it's like if you're a kid who plays two ways, you know, in baseball and you're throwing in the mid 90s and there's that guy in Florida who's going to be like one of the top picks and he's like hit 30 some home runs, but he also throws like 98 miles an hour. And it's like for that guy, like maybe you just focus on hitting and playing the field. So I think there's going to be some kind of correction. I don't know exactly what factor is going to be the thing that pushes it, but I'm guessing it's going to be money.
Yeah, it usually is. I mean, especially it's at that level where you're basically like as a hitter, you're likelier to have a long career than as a pitcher. Like these are pretty basic binary decisions that a person can make even with a ball player's brain. Like this is like, it really is not like that's arithmetic. That is not advanced math.
I mean, that sounds right, but yet like if I like to pitch,
yeah, and if you're like good at pitch, it,
yeah,
you can make a lot of money. It's complicated, but
you know, and if I like, and if I'm a high school running back, like you get to be a fucking stud if you're a high school running back. You get the ball,
you get to score touchdowns. It's cool.
You get to be Bobby Miles and fucking rock. So it's like it's hard to give that up for, you know. I know you have to be sort of, I know you have to live in a bit of delusion that you're going to be a pro athlete, but also like you have to, you know, someone's going to tell you. Probably a parent, like, well, you know, your odds of actually getting to the NFL are a little slim. So maybe just enjoy what you have while you're in high school and play however you want.
I do think one thing that'll help is hopefully parents stop fucking putting their kids in these travel ball programs where they're playing year-round baseball. Baseball is like not something you should be playing year-round. It's just absolutely not. It's so fucking bad for your body. It is. We invented a sport that basically destroys ligaments in your body. And I love that sport, but it should not be played year round. Like I don't let my kid pitches. He loves pitching. We play rec baseball league which is 3 months. He throws an inning, maybe a game, maybe for 20 games in the season. And then his season's over in the summer. I'm like, you're not picking up a fucking baseball. Like that's it. Like we're just, you're not gonna throw 75 innings in a year as a fucking 9-year old.
Is he good at pitching, the kid?
He is good, yeah.
Oh, it's so annoying. You have athletic kids.
He's got a little run on his fastball.
Nice. All right, good. I was gonna say, like, what's his vertical approach angle or whatever?
So annoying when people have exceptional children. I can't.
The thing that I will say one last little bit about this. This is, feels like an old guy gripe. It is an old guy gripe. As an old
guy.
You
are an old guy.
I'll make it. Right. I was going to say, I know people assume that I'm youthful because of my good looks and charm. I'm not. I'm actually 66 years old. when I was a kid, though, it was like the idea of, like, I wanted to throw a curveball before any adult that coached me was going to let me throw a curveball. And I knew how to do it. Like, even before there was YouTube, you could, like, the motion was learnable. Like, you could find it in a book. Someone would tell you how, but they were like,
or
no,
a Tom Emanski video.
Or, yes, Fred McGriff wearing an enormous hat, like a weird stovepipe Abraham Lincoln-ass hat, giving me advice. But that, like, it was understood. There's, like, things that a kid's body, baseball-wise, it's not responsible to have them do. And it does feel weird that that has somehow gone out the window, especially with the travel stuff, because that's a fucking racket. It's expensive, too.
Oh, my God.
That people pay for, because the kids, it's not just, like, travel, like, around your county. Like, these kids get, you know, it's, like, weekend trips, hotels. That, for a bunch of reasons, seems not just unwise, but, like, somehow more backwards than youth baseball was 35 years ago when I was playing it.
Yeah, 35 years ago, it was just, like, you played against the other kids in the neighborhood. There was some asshole dads who took it too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, it made things like awkward socially for like a month. And then everything went back to normal.
Yep. Seems important.
Let's open up the fun bag. These are real questions from defector readers and distraction listeners. We only have, well, actually we have time for two. The first one is from Adam Justin. He writes in, when Cedric Mullins completed his cycle with a home run, should he have been allowed to ride an actual bicycle around the bases to celebrate? Not could have ridden. My wife scoured the rules, and it seems to be implicitly banned in general. But should he have been able to?
I mean, look, this is very Savannah Bananas, but I would say anything. I last night I watched the Padres game. They were down 8-0 in the fourth inning, and they came back and won in 9-8. And they won on a Tatis 2-run, just like absolute blast. And he was going crazy and he did a cool bat flip. And I was like, this is even what he did. You could have multiplied this by 10 and I would have still been enjoying it. So I'm for anything like this.
They could have like a little chest of like props, like by the first base coach. If you have a walk off, like you can grab some sparklers and like a like a fucking hoverboard out
of
it.
Just picturing Carrot Top in the first base box, like doing a real
like a gigantic like Union Jack flag you can just wave around like you're an Iron Maiden concert. I'd be down with all.
Yeah, I agree that there's basically, and I think this is, we spend a lot of time complaining about baseball. This is an area where you got to give it credit. You can do way more goofy shit now than, I don't remember when it became normal for like every walk-off you score and your teammates come out and they just bop you on the head and jump around and rip your jersey off. That's like since I graduated college, that became normal.
Yeah.
Like that would happen in the playoffs. Now it happens like that probably happened to Fernando Tatis last night in early April.
Yeah.
And that rocks, right. Actually. Like, I think that's fine to me. Like, yeah, I don't mind the prop work. I don't mind doing some light, I guess it wouldn't be crowd work because you're not like out there asking your teammates if they're dating anyone.
No, it'd be great for the sport. Like if it's if Rob Manfred is wondering why, you know, Caitlin Clark is more famous than any one of his players, like it's because, first of all, she's awesome. But also, like, she's allowed to, you know, strut her stuff on the court if she wants to. Like, do that in baseball.
Yeah.
Have fucking more.
Yeah. Craziness. These people are all fucking psychos anyway. Just like let them be psychos.
Yeah. This is from John. Last question. John writes in, if you're on a flight and watching a movie you haven't seen before, what genre generally works best for you in a plane setting, whether it's on a headrest screen or a tablet? I feel like action and sci-fi are generally bad choices because they rely more heavily on visuals and sound design. Justin, do you have a go-to genre for airplane movies?
I actually do. I like to watch like, I sort of agree with this guy. I watch like a lot. I like to watch like the indie movies I missed when I'm on a plane. So I watched, I had like a full 5 hour flight not that long ago. And I watched Tar. And then I watched that movie about Harvey Weinstein.
My wife watched that on a flight and really liked it.
Did you like Tar?
I did like Tar. Yeah.
Okay.
I liked Tar a lot.
I'm the rare Tar hater, so I'm not gonna argue with that. I watched on the flight back from London, I watched Past Lives, which was very good. And A Star Is Born, because I hadn't seen it yet. And I did not know Andrew Dice Clay was in it. So when he came on, I almost made an audible noise on the plane. it's Dice. It's fucking Dice.
Tapping the guy on the shoulder, be like, that's Dice.
Yep.
I bet he made that noise when he got the offer to be in that movie.
Yeah.
He's in that and he's in Blue Jasmine and he's good in both. So like, you know, if you had told me, you know, back in 1987 when I worshipped the man, oh, well, he'll be disgraced as a comedian, but like he'll be a fantastic character. Yeah, right. Actor.
Like a very reliable character presence. I would have thought that watching an action movie on a flight would have been a safe, low stakes choice. I've done it in the past because it's like, what am I actually expecting from this? Like,
yeah.
What I want is but I do agree that like you're losing something. Like when you're watching it on a screen that's basically like sub iPad, which is most of your seat back screens. I've moved more towards watching smaller films. Eric mentioned that someone in front of him on a flight watched Call Me By Your Name on an airplane. Don't do that. That's rude. But I have
just the peach scene on a loop.
Yep. Yeah. I'm allowed to watch this on the plane. This is, there might be kids around, but they don't know. They just think it's a fruit.
Actually, I was doing that. I was watching Inherent Vice on a plane, and there's one scene where Lauren Washington just comes out, and she's just fully nude, like bush, yeah. Everything. And I had to angle my laptop, toward the window of the plane, because I didn't want everyone to think I was going to start jerking off.
Screeching. This is adapted from a Thomas Pynchon book, by the way. It's actually very distinguished. A P.T. Anderson picture. I watched a Paul Schrader movie. I watched Master Gardener on a flight most recently. And like it wasn't that good. It was not of the more recent Schraders. It's by far the least of the big three. But that was there was a part of it that I guess it was suited for the little screen. Like it was carefully made, but it wasn't, the sort of thing where I was missing the majesty of just how fucking big they made King Kong this time or whatever. But there was also a part of me, an annoying part of me, that was kind of pleased with myself for watching a Paul Schrader movie on the plane. Like just like, the grind never stops. I'm obnoxious in the air. I'm obnoxious on the ground. I'm always consuming stuff conspicuously. And I would say just don't throw that out just because you're on an airplane. If you're annoying in that way, you got to lean into it.
I would also say it's not genre specific. To me, the perfect airplane movie is a movie that I would not watch or had no plans to watch in any other setting. So like Godzilla, and I don't mean the Emmerich one. I mean the first one of the new trilogy or whatever the fuck. Like I watched that on an airplane and I was perfectly well entertained. The next two were fucking terrible, but like the first one I was like, that's pretty good. And like it's a big movie with big action spectacle and all that stuff. But look, I'm not a baby. Like I can get the impact of a film by watching it on a slightly smaller screen.
It's like a free roll because what happens in the air does not count as much.
I also watched Midnight Special on a plane once, which is a very good movie, but I saw like maybe like 5% of the picture the whole time because it's
the Jeff Nichols movie.
About as well as fucking Million Dollar Baby, like one of those types of movies where it's like I can't see a fucking thing. May as well be blind. Like I may as well like be like trying to make out. I need like a braille thing to tell me like what's happening on
shout screen. Out to Jeff Nichols though, makes good movies. You can watch them in your home, probably the best move.
Eric Silver is our producer. Brandon Grugel is our editor. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. Ads and production services, they're by Multitude. And you can subscribe to defector.com right now. Just go to Defector and hit the subscribe button. You can also email us at distraction@defector.com or even call us at 909-726-3720 and leave a message. That's 909 909- Panera Zero, Justin Halpern. Would you like to plug something? You're a struggling Hollywood writer, so
yeah.
You need all the endorsements you can
Any
get.
Any projects going that people might want
to
know?
I want to use this time to say that if someone asked me to describe Roth, I'd say he's a Mets fan that likes Paul Schrader movies. And I feel like that perfectly sums you up. 100%.
Yeah, you get a mental picture.
They call him Mr. Joy. You know, he loves being happy.
We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.